Jimmy McGriff heads up the band with this tune titled Hard Times. You think it's apropos? This is from his 2001 album, Feeling It. Now, Jimmy McGriff, many of you may know, was a composer, organist, and true bluesman. And did a lot of music, good music. And this one, we have Bill Easley on tenor and alto sax, David Fathead Newman on tenor sax, Ronnie Cuba on baritone sax, Wayne Boyd on guitar, and Kenny Washington on drums. McGriff died at the age of 72 in 2008, but of course, his music lives on. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And guess what? It's Free Your Mind Friday. I always look forward to Free Your Mind Friday because I want to know what you're thinking. And that's the whole point of Free Your Mind Friday. We suspend the regular programming format and we open up the program to listeners and their opinions and comments and their points of view. It is not important whether we agree or disagree with what they have to say. It is important that we listen. And on their side, it is important that they make a presentation worth listening to. Now, I've said time and again, and it's worth repeating, this is a kind of practice session also. It is not just, you know, part of the program. It is about getting you used to the idea of being public with your opinions, of stating your case. And that means you want to put together something that is cogent, that makes sense, that is current. It doesn't have to be current, but it has to be current in the sense that we get a sense that you're keeping pace with what's going on in the world. And you have a considered opinion about something. As I said before, whether people agree or disagree, that's not your worry, nor is it mine. It is only that you have taken the time to put two and two together to make your point. And hopefully you will make it well so that you present a point of view that probably has not yet been heard, and that people would appreciate and say, hey, you know, I didn't think about that. Or they may listen and say, nah, I disagree completely with what that person was saying. But the fact is, it was done so well that they listened to what you had to say and probably will find their way to the microphone soon enough to counter your point of view. That's the whole point of Free Your Mind Friday. So in case you were wondering, that's the explanation. We should be prepared as actual or potential or future agents of change. We should be prepared to present a point of view at any time, anywhere. Take on a fight, make our points, and be unafraid. But it takes practice. You should know that you should be communicating a main point. You don't have all day. So in a concentrated period of time, you make your point and make it strong. And you leave it right where you end it and we see what the fallout is. All right? The number to call is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Positive starts us off today. You're on the air from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, Latrice.
Good afternoon.
First, I got two things. First, I got to applaud you for your patience. And I always want to state this, but I've been more so in the background observing. And that is that I know your show comes on the backdrop of the Gary Knowles Show. But based on my understanding, and you can let me know if I'm wrong, respectfully, this is not the Gary Knowles Show. And it seems like every so often you get a certain amount of calls that want to state Gary Knowles. And I don't fault Gary Knowles. You know, I've been following Gary Knowles for maybe about 30 years or more. And others. I mean, he's not the only one. There's a lot of other ones outside of Gary Knowles. Some of the things I agree with he's saying, and some of the things, especially when it comes to race, at least from a black person's point of view, me being basically 60 years old, you know, I somewhat disagree. But I understand his spirit, and I appreciate it. But at the same time, you, I got to applaud your patience. Because if it was me, I would have a problem with, all the time, people somewhat expecting you to be like Gary Knowles. I know this may be his program or something, like his network or something of that nature, but this is not the Gary Knowles Show. This is Latrice Lee's show. And I've become accustomed to that, and I respect you for that.
Thank you. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has a particular voice. And you should know, it's Gary Knowles is the owner of the Progressive Radio Network. We've been working together for quite some time, since the days of WBAI, in which he has played a major role in sustaining the radio station. If it weren't for his programs, I don't think there would be a WBAI today. And of course, he spun off and PRN was born. And then I came after him. I was slotted in after him so that we have a good carryover. He has a strong audience, and so do I. I'm building. So it's a good tag team. And we have no problems at all with each other.
That's good. That's good. Thank you. I just wanted to express that. And the other thing I want to say is there's something I noticed, well, I didn't say I noticed it, but I see a lot on the news, at least here in New York. It seems like everybody that's committing crime in New York is black. For blacks to be somewhat of a, was known to be a minority in New York City, it seems like all the crimes, I don't care who it's against, be it Chinese, be it Jewish synagogues or anywhere, it seems like most of the crime, or not all the crime, that you see that's being committed, especially those that's being videotaped, or caught on camera at least, it's all black. I mean, is it just me, or is that, you know, question.
Okay, so make a point, though. This is the time when you are to make a definitive statement, not a definitive question. Make a definitive statement based on what is your theory?
Well, I think that I think that it's some type of nothing new propaganda to more or less place crime on black people in particular, not only but on black people in particular, and to justify some of the injustices that's being portrayed against black people by law enforcement in particular. And I notice a lot of times it comes on a backdrop of either controversial issues that's being on the news in regards to law enforcement and their corruption against blacks in particular, but not only. And even backdrop in some TV shows that are based upon police stories and et cetera, you know? That's just my theory.
Well, here's what I would urge you to do. I would urge you to take the same premise that you just outlined and move it beyond theory. Mm-hmm. By that I mean, let's say you watch the news for a week with a notebook and a pen or a pencil. Yeah. And you make a notation, you'd be doing your own unofficial study of what you were able to analyze as news coverage involving people of color, especially African Americans, over the course of the week. And over the course of the week, how much time would you say was given to stories that followed the line that you're talking about today? And now you're getting scientific and you're getting precise, more and more precise. And therefore, okay, the point that you're making starts growing some legs, because you're not talking from the top of your head anymore, and you're not talking from the point of view that, well, this is a suspicion of mine. We move beyond that now. Mm. So when you have a time to say you're going to be watching the news for a week, let's say pick a week, and you are scrutinizing the coverage with keeping in mind the theory you just expressed, then you can ask, is this theory? Am I just imagining things? Or is there some, did I pick up on something? And now your theory begins to take root.
Right. In other words, to find out whether it's a systemic thing, you're saying.
Whether it's, how real is it? Did you just happen to tune into the news when you saw this, and by extension, you naturally, you know, you projected beyond what you saw, but without any proof or without any basis? Watch the news.
Thank you. And, I appreciate that.
And,
I'll try.
And put it together as a project, as a specific project, and then you present it to us and you say, I watch the news for a week. That's X number of hours. And in this time frame, this is what I saw as coverage, and this is how Black people were portrayed. This is the category that they most often appeared in, the category of crime, as the people who commit crimes. And you can begin now to make a whole argument, not that it hasn't been made before, but the way you would make it would become so real. And you will then be able to quantify. You're not going to be talking in the ether anymore. You have facts, you have figures, and now you raise the question, and then you engage us. That's the best way to go, make use of what you just outlined.
Okay, I'll do that and get back to you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for starting us off today. Gary from Manhattan, what are you freeing your mind of today?
Yes, I'm going to mention Gary Null. Gary Null says that 90% of the people who go around shooting other people and kill themselves in the process says are on psychotic drugs. 90%. I don't know how he got the figure, but that's what Gary Null said. And the problem is that when they do this, very rarely would the media mention this fact. And I believe if they did that, which they won't, because we don't want to upset the pharmaceutical company of $1 billion, and that's the reason why you never hear of it. I believe that these shootings would be far less, at least 50% less shootings because of these psychotic drugs. That's my opinion.
Okay. It's not enough to just add those words. It's my opinion. Those are the three most dangerous words you can say. Because people intend it to mean, don't ask me any other questions. It's my opinion.
Oh, you could ask me anything you like.
Okay. My question would be, where should this be leading you in terms of inquiry right now?
What do you mean by, what is it, what should I do with inquiry? What do you mean?
You stated a fact as deriving from Gary Null in particular.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And you seem to agree with it.
Yes.
Okay. What then, is it enough to simply say, okay, Gary Null says so and so, and mm-hmm. I agree. And that's my opinion. You see, they're not gelling. So I'm going to ask you, how do you make sense? Or how do you dismiss? How do you conduct any kind of inquiry around those facts that you have just presented? That
right,
it makes sense to perhaps
right,
a larger group
make the
of people.
Sense. I make the sense is that the media will never tell you that they're on psychotic drugs. Because they're afraid to, because it might upset the pharmaceutical companies. That is what I'm trying to tell you. That the shootings will go on. It won't stop. It will even be more. Until the public gets so outraged that they know why this is happening. And if they know it, if the media ever said this, which they will not, I believe this whole thing would go away at least 50%. That is what I'm trying to say.
We're all conjecturing, and I'm trying to get you to be a bit more concrete. How do we know the role of psychotic drugs in shootings and murders, etc.? How do we get to those figures?
Well, I don't know how Gary Null got to 90%. All I know is that if the media would tell you as what drugs were on these people, if we had the media actually told you every time there was a shooting, this guy was on psychotic drugs, then this would change everything. That's what I believe.
Okay. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Positive. How do you take this argument further and put some flesh on the bones of it?
Well, that is why I call you, because you are the teacher.
That's why you call me. Oh, thanks
a
lot.
I call you. Listen, because I listen to you. I listen to you for hours. I think most of the callers are really boring, and they really don't state their points and everything like that. But I call you because I like the way you ask people to really answer the question, and I really don't know how to go any further on this, and that's why I'm calling to ask you, how can I go any further than this?
Well, there is, in the world of criminology, a discipline that studies the cause and effect of various things that cause people to commit crimes or are associated with crimes. The hallucinogenic drugs might be one. Violence might be one. Illegal weapons might be one. But the FBI breaks this down in terms of what kinds of crimes are being committed and why. There is such a thing. It's a specialty area, and you'll have to go hunting, I suppose, in the police academy or police department would have a good clue as to where you can find these numbers. At least, not that they are in concrete, but they're the best references that we have in all these different categories linked to particular kinds of crime.
Well, Latrice, since I am such a lazy person, it is very easy for me to say that I quote Gary, and I don't know where he picks this stuff up, how he got it. I don't know how he figured out the 90%. The probably because he reads between the lines, because he's able to find out this information that the news reporters won't tell you and make it so easy for you if they just said it. But I'd like to know how he did.
Yes, but these kinds of facts do exist somewhere. And
yeah, I'd like to know where are these
for you to chase
I'd like
down.
To find out. Can you tell me where I could find out that every time someone shoots somebody, how do I find out if these guys are on psychotic drugs? I'd like to know, how the hell did Gary know? That's what I want to know.
Because people operate in specialty areas, many of them, as professionals, as experts, and they have access to all these kinds of things, all these records and whatnot. They're stored somewhere. Even in, you know, they're not necessarily the most detailed, but you do find some areas where you can get a sense of what does the face of crime look like? Who is committing crimes? What kind of crimes? What is the impact? Who are the people they commit crimes against or upon? These are, they're readily available.
They're readily available. Where can I find out if a guy was on psychotic drugs who shoots 10, 20 people? Where do I find that out?
Well, I would suggest you wouldn't find that out right then and there. You can't find that out quickly, because these are things that go through their own permutations, and they distill this and then they distill that. But there are still records that will give you an indication. They may not be up to the minute current, but say within the last 5 years, you should be able to get something to give you an indication of at least what the trend looks like.
You asked me to do hard work. I don't want, I am the majority of the people. I am a lazy guy. I want the answers. I want it now. That's why Amazon is so successful, because you don't have to do nothing. It's so simple. You see,
you can go to the John Jay College of Criminal Justice right there. You're in New York, I assume.
I'm in Manhattan, yes.
And you can go to the library there.
Well, I can promise you, when I hang up, Latrice, people are going to talk about this. The next half hour, I promise you, people will say something to you.
Yes, they very well might. But I'll be asking the same question.
And I hope they had come up with something. I really do. I hope they come up. So I'm going to hang up now and hope that somebody has more information than I do.
I think you should. A good place for you to start would be the library at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City.
Your listeners don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. That's not what the public wants to know.
No, but that's, you're doing it for the listeners. You're doing it for you. You're doing it.
I want
you.
Instant gratification is what I want.
Oh, I see. Well, you're out of luck. There's no such thing.
All right.
You should
go, you were
going to
say that.
Look it up.
I knew.
And
but the only reason why I called you, the only reason why I do, Latrice, is because I know that people are going to talk to you after I hang up. They are going to come up. Somebody's going to come up with some information.
All right. I hope so. And thank you for calling and contributing today.
Bye-bye.
Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hey, Harvey, what's going on?
Well, today I'd like to share a few facts about water scarcity due to climate destabilization because of our over-carbonization of our atmosphere. It turns out that both the fossil fuel and the nuclear industry collectively consume approximately 133 billion, that's with a B, gallons of our nation's precious water resources on a daily basis, which adds up to a staggering 48,500 billion gallons of water a year, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. On the brighter side, once manufactured and installed, solar panels use no water, except for an occasional cleaning over their estimated 20 to 25 year lifetime warranty. So considering our nation's devastating droughts and catastrophic wildfires, especially here in the West, we need to seriously re-examine our water use priorities. And I say it's time to get star-powered. Let's get solar to save our precious water resources.
And I say thank you very much, because when you present a point of view, you usually can cite the origin of the facts you quote, in this case, the U.S. Geological Survey. You tell us about what your premise is, and you follow through with precision. I like that. I always look forward to hearing what your new point of view is. Thank you so much, Harvey, for calling today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Okay. How's by you?
All right. Wanted to wish you and the Lead Stories and PRN listeners a productive and safe weekend. Also, too, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're celebrating a birthday this time of the year. So I wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yes. So happy birthday. And this is how long I've been listening to you. I remember your birthday.
Well, you got me, and I have to fess up. Yes. Yes, this is my birthday month. It was June the 1st.
Yes. So happy belated
birthday. I'm 26.
Hey, you know what? I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to argue about that. You are the wisest 26-year-old person
that
I've ever talked
nothing
to.
Nothing on me right now that is 26 years old.
Yes, you are the wisest 26-year-old
I've
ever talked to. But, you know, I wanted to quickly talk about a discussion I was having with somebody in regards to the role of the Black church in our community. And, you know, he goes on to talk about how, you know, Christianity has destroyed us as a people, and, you know, how the giving me historical aspects of, you know, the slave masters have imposed Christianity on our ancestors and everything. And, you know, which is true. But when you're talking about the complex history of Christianity, the Black church, it's not as simple as, well, it destroyed us, but, you know, in some ways it also helped us as well. And, you know, I know the difference between having a difference of opinion and having a disagreement. And generally, for a difference of opinion, you know, there's no right or wrong with people's opinions. But when you're talking about a disagreement, and I believe this is a disagreement, where, you know, he just says Christianity or the church has completely, you know, destroyed us. And looking at it from the lens of now, yes, I do think that the church is generally hindering us from being who we are as people. But at the same time, that hasn't been the historical case. I mean, the role of the Black church in the civil rights movement has played a prominent part of, you know, what was going on. Many, you know, and you probably have this experience with Abyssinian, that church has a lot of activities in regards to, you know, social justice and various other things that you can probably name or say. So, and then, you know, you start talking about religion, you know, and how religion, and I'm like, well, if that's the case, then people like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, who was a Christian, would be irrelevant to us. And these were people who were rooted in their faith. So, you know, I kind of cringe when people say that, you know, we need to get rid of religion. No, I think we just need to take it back and use it as a tool for our liberation again, and not let these ministers and pastors you know, tell us that, you know, life on the other side will be better. No, we need to use this form of practice to make life on this side better. So, That was my thing that we can, the role of religion in our community still can be used to our benefit, but we have to take it back by the reins, and somehow we have to understand that it used to be a tool for liberation, but now it's something different now.
Have you ever asked people who take that position that religion does not promote liberation, but in fact causes a retardation of progress, especially in the African-American community? What do they think is a good substitute?
Well, I mean, some of them would, you know, like the people that I've talked to who've taken that position, some of them would just basically say, you know, just pure atheism. Some of them would talk about, you know, African spiritual practices. And, you know, for me, I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I'm going to let you know this. As an overall collective, Black people have always been rooted in the Abrahamic faith. And to, you know, talk to people, you know, to talk to the collective community about, you know, going to atheism or going to some other African spirituality is kind of foreign to them.
Yes, it is foreign, in fact, to many, many people. And I have I have trouble with this too. The feeling, and it's mostly on behalf of the speaker who wants to be regarded in a particular way, they're so revolutionary that they have no use for organized religion. Okay, that's one point of view. But they never tell us what an appropriate substitute is and why.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know. I'm curious. What is an appropriate substitute? Especially since you recognize how pivotal the role of religion is to people of African descent. All kinds of religion. Some are animists. Some are Christian, some are Muslim. It's all the way across the spectrum. So it means that there is a longing, there is a proclivity to wanting to be close to something spiritual in nature, to fortify them in everyday life. Why is that necessarily a bad thing?
You got me there, Eutrice. And I, you know, me myself, you know, like you said, I think the collective of our community wants something spiritual and they need a spiritual practice because, like I said, you can't convince, you know, half of our community to just say, well, we don't believe in anything outside of just things that we can see, touch, taste, and smell. Because there are many people who believe that there is something, you know, greater than their existence right now. And
this is before Christ.
Yes.
Existed long before Christ.
Many of the Abrahamic religions, as Dr. Ben has taught us, have been rooted in African spirituality. So actually, you know, if you are practicing Christianity, Islam or Judaism in its true sense, you are actually practicing African spirituality. And, you know, I believe that when you look at people who are rooted in their faith, this is what draws, you know, people to their, you know, to their actions. And not necessarily because of the fact that, you know, like Marcus Garvey was not a Christian just for the sake of being a Christian. He understood the spiritual practices can be used for liberation. Same thing with Malcolm X. He wasn't a Muslim just for being the sake of being a Muslim. he knew the spiritual practices of Islam that can help liberate our people. And, you know, about 2 months ago, you had the scholar who was an expert on Hubert Harrison. And,
yes.
You know, very intelligent person. And he was an atheist. But I think that was probably one of the reasons why not a lot of people knew about him. And not to say that that was a negative thing, because he has a lot. You know, I bought the two books, and I was looking at some of the stuff that he was saying, and it was very, very, you know, insightful. But, you know, at the same time, his attack on religions, you know, could have been why he just never got a big following during his time. So, I mean, I might be wrong on that, but, you know, that's something that I kind of, you know, drew as a conclusion when I was reading some of his works.
Well, I don't think he bothered much about having a big following. I think he was more, this is talking about Harrison now, I think he was more concerned about raising the consciousness of people generally across the board, including his own. He literally was a self-taught person about religion, and you can't argue with any aspect of what it is he finally determined religion should be and do for a person who is considered a revolutionary or progressive person. He incorporated that as a natural part of the terrain, it seemed to me, and not condemning it in any way. But he was careful to point out that religion was very, very scientifically applied to encourage the subjugation of millions of people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed to take a look at that, a clinical and a critical look at the spirituality that they chose to follow. Now, when it comes to how do people come to the point of selecting which religious path, if any, to follow? I still don't know what compels people to go this way or that way on religion.
Well, I mean, for me, obviously, I grew up as a Catholic. So, but at the same time, I understand that the institution that is being run is being run by white men, and they are not really following the tenets of their principles and practices as people who have organized the Christian faith. So I understand that the institution of the Catholic Church is going against their own principles and practices of the particular faith. So, you know, I try to, when I talk to people of the Catholic faith, make them understand that this is the way that they're practicing is wrong.
Ooh, so you're walking on hot coals for a long time, huh?
Oh, most definitely.
I usually run away from topics like that because it is so hard to understand how people arrive at a point of making peace with concepts that logically don't make sense. But they do make peace with them, and they do incorporate them, and they do value them. So what do? You let them believe whatever they wish to believe. But if you were to talk to the average Catholic, even an African-American Catholic, and you show the parallels of African spirituality, clear parallels, they'll tell you, they say something is wrong with you.
Of course, they do.
They'll say you're preaching, heresy.
Of course. You know, when you talk about, when I talk about the synchronism of what the Haitians practice as far as, you know, their own African spirituality, which they call voodoo, and accepting the Catholicism that the French had imposed on them, they saw a parallel between those practices. And this is why you have Haitians and actually people in Louisiana who kind of indulge into that, you know, particular spiritual practice.
Well, I don't know how this is going to be resolved, except that people at some point will decide what they wish to recognize for themselves as a spiritual guide in their lives and follow it. They're not going to depend on the church, any church or any particular pastor to call the shots. They have come to the conclusion that this is something they can take care of themselves and must do it themselves for it to make sense. And they'll proceed.
Yep.
Thanks. Thanks for your call today, Mr. Thank Holy you. Man. Thank you for calling in. Ed from Queens, what's going on in your head today? What are you freeing your mind up?
Hey, Trace, how you doing? And happy belated birthday to you. Happy
Thank
belated
you.
Birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was just, I'm referring to one of your previous callers talking about school shootings in relation to psychotropic drugs. Just to personally let you know my background as far as dealing with this, I've had family members and myself underwent some forms of psychiatric treatment. I believe that psychiatric drugs do serve a purpose, even though they're very controversial. They have to be applied by competent physicians, and in specific instances, they can mitigate and control symptoms and allow a person to have a normal life. The caller was interested in the correlation between active shooters of mass shootings and psychotropic drugs. The FBI has a series of publications from 2000 to 2019, active shooter publications, where they draw correlations between incidents of mass shootings in schools, particularly, and in later publications, other mass shootings, and whether or not the individuals or individual was being treated by certain types of psychotropic drugs, Haldol, Thorazine, things of that nature. So you can look that up. There are two schools of thought on it. A lot of people believe in a holistic approach like Gary Noel does, and I don't know why he didn't get Gary Noel's sources, because Gary Noel always, as far as when I've ever heard any of his opinions, he always documents his opinions with qualified sources you can look up yourself so you can draw your own conclusions. So I don't know, he must have not been listening. But all the time, Gary Noel lists his sources. But as I said, there are two schools of thought on it. Holistic approach to improve diet, exercise, and the environmental concerns that will improve the effects, the psychotropic effects, the symptoms that are caused by psychosis, and medication. Personally, I think medication is suitable in certain circumstances based on personal experience. And I believe that people can lead productive lives if the medication is prescribed responsibly by a competent physician, and side effects can be mitigated. But he can look that up with the FBI if he wants to pursue it further.
Yes, I recommended that he go to the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and their library. They have a pretty impressive library over there.
Well, the FBI has a website with actual publications from 2000 to 2019. And the FDA also has a cross study from 2016 to 2018 of mass shootings and their relation to psychotropic drugs, as far as if the individuals or individual were on those drugs, what doses they were taking. A lot of the information is hard to ascertain because Some people don't get diagnosed. Some people are not forward with, there's confidentiality issues involved. There are other mitigating circumstances as far as the proprietary litigation from pharmaceutical manufacturers not releasing certain studies because they're trying to protect themselves from lawsuits. So the information is out there, but it's difficult to get. And the public record primarily is with the FDA and the FBI.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thanks so much, Ed, for your call today. Leona from Michigan. Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice, and greetings to your audience.
Thank you.
Listen,
and you too.
Thank you. I wanted to add 2 cents to the conversation about religion and liberation and black people. I'll be quick, and I'll try to stay focused and blah, blah, blah. In terms of liberation and religion, Dr. Francis Kretz Welsing had what I thought was a great quote from the ISIS papers. And it has to do with, it goes as follows. I'll be quick. To be black and accept consciously or unconsciously the image of God as a white man is the highest possible form of self-negation and lack of self-respect under the specific conditions of white domination. Such perception, emotional response, and thought are therefore insane. This logic circuit ensures that black people always look up to white people and therefore down upon themselves. Only by breaking that logic circuit can the concept of black and other non-white liberation become a reality. This is the direction in which we blacks must propel ourselves as we enter the 21st century. End of quote.
So, Leona, I need you to answer this question. Is there
ma'am.
What is your utter devotion to Francis Kress Welsing that you never miss an opportunity to quote her and to promote her books as you do with Neely Fuller? Those are the two that I could pick up on that you most readily tout.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a reason?
Yes, ma'am. The reason is simply that I study their work. I think their work is important. I'm seeing where it applies in my own life and in the life of my relatives, and that's where I'm at right now in this journey of life. I think that her contribution to the liberation and the production of justice on planet Earth is important and worthwhile. I'm glad
yes,
that...
Yes, but it comes across as proselytizing, if you don't mind me saying that. It's one thing to have a strong opinion in support of one thing or the other.
Yes, ma'am.
But you have to be careful. As much as they have contributed, they're not the only people that you should be reading and quoting. And you're not suggesting, you're not giving us clues that you're reading and you're analyzing critically. It is, as you read it, you believe exactly what it says 100%, and you put yourself in service as a person proselytizing. You got to read this book or else, pretty much. Read this book.
Mm-hmm.
It is vitally important, that you keep an open mind because you are in a position to influence others. And when repeatedly you have an opportunity to open people's eyes and you open their eyes to one writer and one, you know, one philosopher or however you look at it, you reduce many possibilities for open discussion. Because just like you just quoted Francis Kress Welsing here on this program, you just quoted her. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm saying be critical. I've edited her work. I've edited many Black scholars' works. And they will tell you, many of them have walked away from me in the editing process because I'm not easy. I ask serious questions that must be answered, not for ego-tripping purposes, but because this is scholarship. I could rattle off a list of scholars who I could put my head on a chopping block for because I know how they go about their work. I know how they research. Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. John Henrik Clark, Dr. Sharshi McIntyre, Dr. Edward Scobie, Dr. Jan Carew. When they take on a project and we sit down to edit, it takes months and sometimes even longer than that to get through because I ask for documentation of everything. I want to see the citations. I want to see the source material. And I don't want scholarship to become what you're thinking. That's not scholarship. Scholarship is, as Van Sertima would get on a ship, a plane, and a boat, and a canoe to go find something in the heart of the jungles of South America. Edward Scobie had tons of material. Ivan Van Sertima ran out of house because he didn't have enough places in his house to store his material. And even the garage that he had crammed to the rafters with supporting material for his work. You don't want to ask about John Henrik Clark. You don't want to ask about Jan Carew. Scholarship is a very special service to our community. And a lot of scholars are palming off their opinions, or they palm off some theories that are not necessarily based in fact, but they think it sounds close enough to scholarship. And we have to be very careful about that.
I will think very critically about what you just shared. I appreciate that. I'm definitely going to give it some thought. And are you suggesting that Frances Cress Welsing's work is not scholarly?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
Okay.
There are things that I'm uneasy about her scholarship.
Ma'am. Oh.
Very uneasy.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think the world of scholarship, especially in the Black world, we have to insist on standards that, because it is sexy, people, you know, you have lots of people who come up with theories, but there is no way you could listen to a tape by Amos Wilson and mistake it for propaganda. No way at all.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I got one of his books, several of them, Blueprint, Black Power, Self-Hatred, and Self-Defeat.
Yes.
And Cress Welsing, yeah, she her theory, definitely. Her theory is what kind of like brought her to national attention pretty much. But as far as I know, it's a theory that has not been refuted, not yet. And again, it's a theory.
Listen,
I know we're getting close to the clock, you trees. And there was this one white Southern Christian woman in 2000 year 2000, and her name was Farrell Winfrey. She's a white Christian woman, and she told this young black fella that her people had taught black preachers to preach three sermons. One, slaves, obey your master. Two, turn the other cheek. Three, get your reward in heaven. That kind of Christianity with a white God is anti-liberation, with an image of white Jesus,
but that's
anti-liberation.
That's not even worth discussing as scholarship. I wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not a scholar, but okay, I'm going to re-listen to this. Thank you for sharing what you have.
So it's very, very important, especially because you are a seeker. You are a seeker. And therefore, I would venture to say your spirit is open. And that makes you vulnerable because you're not being critical. You are a seeker, a true seeker. And I wish for you to tread carefully. Thanks so much for calling in today. Thank you all for calling in today. And until somebody reminded me, I think it was day before yesterday, that my birthday had passed, I always forget. I always remember post facto, but it's all right. We'll improve as time goes by. Thank you so much. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things into your life. And you can do the same for someone else. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.